Welcome to the Asbury First United Methodist Church weekly sermon. We hope you enjoy this message by Mike Mullen. For more information about this podcast or for other ways to connect, please visit asburyfirst.org.
Now, as I was reading our passage for today for the first time, I thought to myself, I am so glad that this is one of those well-known texts. You know, on par with Jesus feeding the 5,000, Noah's Ark, etc. But, you know, now that I say that out loud, and as I, in my head, maybe see some confused looks or maybe some stifled laughter out there through the technological screen, I'm thinking that perhaps I was mistaken, and at second glance, I suppose that makes sense. I mean, if we're honest, most of us don't even know who the subject of this story is. And when I say most of us, I mean me. When I first read this passage, I wasn't confident who the pronouns were referring to. Well, as it turns out, he in this passage is Elijah. But even with that new knowledge, this passage is still a bit obscure. Some of us may recognize the name of the prophet Elijah as one of the great prophets from the Hebrew scriptures. And yet this story doesn't exactly reflect our grandiose memories. Or perhaps more accurately stated, this doesn't match the cherry-picked stories that we grew up with and were taught about Elijah. No, this depiction of Elijah is not a larger-than-life figure who walks with God, but instead is a despondent human who has literally given up on life. The interpretation commentary summarizes these verses as the moment in Elijah's ministry when he is burned out and ready to call it quits. Now, if you're like me, you're probably wondering what led Elijah to this tipping point. Was it the latest committee meeting that he had to attend that could have simply been handled by carrier pigeon? Was it that one follower who has a knack for criticizing every little thing that Elijah does and says, often publicly? Was it the pressure of maintaining a prophetic presence and prose even while driving his chariot during rush hour? Or was it the realization that flexible work hours actually meant that he was on call 24/7, 365. To be fair, it's probable that all of those things got to Elijah at one point or another, just as they get to our modern preachers, prophets, and pastors today. But in the story's context, Elijah's problems are a bit more dire. You see, 1 Kings 19 opens with Elijah receiving a death threat from Jezebel. Jezebel. Now, that is another name that some of us may recognize. I, for one, think it is a beautiful name, and even suggested it as a possible name for my daughter. And while my suggestion was not just another placeholder, my vote was still vetoed, and with unfortunate, yet understandable justification. The name Jezebel has been so smeared that it has even come to be used at times as a derogatory term for an immoral woman. In Jezebel's case, we may be reminded that it matters a great deal who gets to tell your story. In 1 Kings 16, we learn that Jezebel marries Ahab, the king of Israel. Jezebel worshipped Baal, and so King Ahab had altars for Baal erected and began worshipping Baal along with his spouse. For those that are in the know regarding ancient Israel, you will recognize that this is kind of a no-no. Baal was to the God of Israel something like Harry Potter was to Voldemort or Venom is to Spider-Man. And in 1 Kings 18, we see Elijah mocking Baal and his prophets before ultimately slaughtering them all. So when King Ahab tells Jezebel of what Elijah has done, she is incensed and sends a messenger to deliver her threat of vengeance to Elijah at once. Once again, it matters a great deal who gets to tell your story. From Israel's vantage point and from our contemporary parlance, it is clear who is in the wrong. And yet, if the above recounting of events is all we knew of this story, then I bet most of us would resonate more with Jezebel than we do with Elijah. Some commentators have even suggested that this might be part of what led Elijah to run away into the wilderness. Perhaps he was convicted and contrite. Maybe, like Christian Bale's characterization of Moses in the movie Exodus, Gods and Kings, Elijah thinks that God has gone too far with his commands to kill. Unfortunately, this wouldn't really fit with the general narrative we see portrayed in the Hebrew prophets, but is still an interesting and worthy concept to consider. And so, we return to our passage for today. We now have a bit more of the context. Elijah is running away from Jezebel, the wife of Ahab, the king of Israel, because she wants to kill him. And Jezebel wants to kill Elijah because he murdered all of the prophets of Baal. All of this divine division over two differently demarcated devotees. Just look how far we've come in 3,000 years. But sobering realizations aside, let's reconsider our text. Elijah is spent. He has dismissed his servant and he has gone off into the wilderness to die. While there, Elijah is greeted by an angel or a messenger. It may be worth noting that the Hebrew word used here is the same as that of the messenger sent by Jezebel just a few verses earlier, Malak. The messenger, angel, in our passage first brings Elijah sustenance, with no additional commentary aside from, get up and eat. A second time, the angel messenger brings Elijah more food and mentions that Elijah has a journey ahead of him. He will be going on a great journey, poetically depicted as a journey of 40 days and nights, to Mount Horeb, sometimes called Mount Sinai, depending on who is writing. Now, I think it is worth pausing here, particularly because our passage does not tell us what comes next. In this point in the story, we do not know if there is a happy ending out there for Elijah. I'm sure that many of us can relate to that in our own lives. Some of us can relate to that feeling just this morning. Perhaps we woke up and those nagging voices in our heads were once again trying to tell us that this world would be a better place if we were not in it. And yet, something moved us to get out of bed and start our day. Or maybe you're not even out of bed, but you're here, you're listening, and that is still something. We all have a different first step for our journey. Regardless, the point here is that sometimes we need a little help. Sometimes our tunnel vision and our cognitive dissonance takes over and it becomes too difficult to provide for our own needs. Sometimes we need a messenger. We need an angel who just steps in with some cake to say soothingly, "Get up and eat," and nothing more. Even the great prophets of the Hebrew scriptures only made it through their darkest days with a little help from their friends. We all need these supports, and we are all called to be these supports for others. But if we're honest, this is not easy work. It is not easy to ask for help when we feel like our life is no longer worth living. Many of us know that there is a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline available 24/7, 1-800-273-8255. Whether you are having suicidal ideations or you know someone who might be, you can call 1-800-273-8255 and they can help talk you through what's going on. In addition, we can now even text. You can text HOME to 741-741 any time of the day or night to chat with a crisis counselor via text. Any age in any crisis can text 741-741, and they will connect you with an appropriate crisis counselor. And yet, even with all of these modern resources at our fingertips, we know that we still have those moments like Elijah under the broom tree. Sometimes, we still need someone to intercede on our behalf. There is a wonderful website, seizetheawkward.org, which encourages each of us to be those messengers, those angels in our daily lives. When we notice a friend, a family member, a colleague, or an acquaintance acting a little bit off, we are encouraged to seize the awkward and ask, "What's up?" We live in an individualistic society, and we know that it can be awkward to ask about someone else's business, especially when it seems like none of our own. And yet, sometimes, this is what it means to be the church. The church is a community of people just trying their best to make it through each day. As we often hear at Asbury First, this is not a perfect place, but we are more perfect with you here. We are more perfect with you here. And if you're hearing these words this morning and thinking, "Yeah, but they're not talking about me," we are talking about you. I am talking about you. We are a more perfect place because you are here. And if we are going to live into our call to be the church, that means that sometimes we need to step out of our comfort zones and seize the awkward. We need to step out and reach out and check in. It has been one hell of a year of separation, isolation, and alienation, and God knows we could all use a good check-in. Bake a cake. Make some cookies. Send a text. Phone a friend. Reach out to someone who perhaps has faded into the background in the past year. Help us be the church that we are called to be, and help us live into our slogan that we are better together. We are called to be messengers. We are called to be angels to our neighbors. So where does the story go from here? 1 Kings 19 continues with Elijah experiencing God on Mount Horeb, not in a terrifying wind or earthquake or fire, but in silence. Sheer silence. And for many of us, silence is the most terrifying of all. But this silence is one that surpasses even those degrading and debilitating voices in our heads. This is a divine silence, a peaceful silence, a silence that reminds us in the stillness that we are not alone, that we are loved, that who we are is enough. This is the gospel message that we all desperately need to hear. For Elijah, for Ahab, for Jezebel, for you, for me, we are not alone. We are loved. We are enough. And once we have heard this message, once we have embodied this call, we have a duty to pay it forward. We are called, each of us, as angels, as messengers, to join in our commitment to do more good. We truly are better together, and we can't do it without you. Help us to be the church that actively engages people with open hearts, with open minds, with open doors, and with open arms, so that we all may continue on our journeys to live, love, serve, and most importantly, repeat. May it be so. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Asbury First Weekly Sermon. If you enjoyed this message, please visit asburyfirst.org and learn more about our mission to love God and neighbor, to live fully, to serve all, and then repeat.